And good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. And today we're going to be talking about a four-part community workshop that will be happening every for the first four Saturdays in March on addiction and recovery. And so I have some guests here in the studio today to talk about the workshop series and substance abuse service providers and wherever else it takes us. So joining me in the studio this afternoon are Jill Wallace, bachelor's in criminal psychology, and Thea Falcone, bachelor's in social science and master's in sociology. And they're working on a partnership between the Kodiak Area Mentor Program and a program called Kodiak Reentry to put these workshops together. Welcome, Jill and Thea.
Thank you.
Oh, you know what? Yours, Mike, may not be.
Now?
Try the one next to you.
How's that?
There we go.
Okay.
Now we're on. Okay. The Island Messenger ended a little early. We didn't get to our mic check. So we're doing a live mic check for our listeners out there right now. Thanks for your patience with this. Let's talk about the two partnering organizations that are part of this, and then we'll kind of get into the details and the purpose and why. So, Jill and Thea, start off with CAMP.
Okay. So, Kodiak Area Mentor Program, or CAMP, has been a vital part of the community for 10 years. In fact, in May, they will celebrate their 10th anniversary since launching. Kodiak Area Mentor Program works to build and nurture mentoring relationships between people who are maybe struggling with post-incarceration life or any type of involvement in the criminal justice system, and people with addictions of any type and mental health issues. And build and nurture relationships with people who are perhaps living more healthier lives or stronger lives. And through those relationships, everybody wins because people get to know each other, and the people who are struggling have a better chance at achieving their life goals and being interactive with the community and contributing to our community. So that's CAMP. Kodiak Reentry is actually a new nonprofit that a group of us are going to be launching probably in July. We're hoping for July 1st, but it'll most likely be sometime this summer. And Kodiak Reentry is focused on case management for people who are returning to the community from incarceration, and we will be serving reentrants who have served any amount of time, even if it's just one day, within the past 3 years. And we will be doing case management services to assist them in getting employment, education, and being able to deal with the details of their lives in order to be more successful when they return to the community. Housing will be a big issue. We've been working on forming Kodiak Reentry for a couple of years now, but we are almost to the point where we will be ready to launch, like I said, in July, hopefully.
So I think several of our listeners probably already familiar with CAMP, and so Kodiak Reentry is new. With the development of Kodiak Reentry, I mean, what led to the creation of that organization? I think a lot of us assume that there are governmental services, state services, or even federal services.
Right. So throughout Alaska, there are 8 reentry programs, and those 8 reentry programs were designated by the Department of Corrections in particular locations throughout Alaska where there are they're located a little closer to the institutions. And so those communities would get probably more people releasing from prison to those communities. They were designated right around the time SB 91 was going on. And there, at about that time, they created a reentry unit within Department of Corrections to help oversee and guide those reentry programs. They were all designated, and they all are under fiscal sponsorship by other nonprofit organizations. Right. Kodiak was not selected to have a reentry program, but we decided that we wanted one. That's why it's taken so long, because we've had to go through the process of finding out, you know, learning how did these other reentry programs get started and how do they function and what is their relationship to the Department of Corrections. So what we are doing is unique. No one else in the state has done this, which is pretty common for people in Kodiak. When we don't get our needs met, we figure out how to do it ourselves, and that's what we did. Many community members got together and agencies to lay the groundwork for this, and then now we officially have a board of directors. We are going to be independent and have our own 501c3 designation, so we will not be under fiscal sponsorship with any other organization. We will, obtain our own grant funding and run it ourselves.
This is an oft-cited statistic on Talk of the Rock that Kodiak has the highest percentage of nonprofit organizations in the state and probably in the United States too. And just because of exactly what you said, when we don't have the resources, We still find a way to get it done.
We create them.
We create our own Woodstock.
Yeah. So let me see if I can get this characterization right. So Kodiak Reentry is kind of more on the you use the term post-incarceration, but Kodiak Reentry is kind of on the logistic, legal side. And then camp is kind of on the social, emotional, spiritual recovery side?
Yes. So how I typically describe it is that camp focuses on relationships, and Kodiak Reentry focuses on case management.
Okay. So, Thea, how did you get wrapped up in this?
Jill pestered me. actually, as a person in long-term recovery, I'm always interested in bringing information to the community. And Jill pestered me, basically. But
Thea's the right person to team up with to do this, because she... Well, actually, I think between Thea and me, we have all the skills that it takes to provide this type of education to the community that we're planning for March.
Yes. All right, so let's talk about it. A four-part community workshop series, the first four Saturdays in March at the camp space. This is over AT&T?
Yes.
Downtown. How did this... So let's describe what's going on with the workshops.
Want me to start? Well, yeah. the first week, James Price is coming in, and I don't know who knows him, but James is probably the most qualified substance abuse and co-occurring disorder person in the state. Hmm. He's a licensed professional counselor. I was going to say criminal. And he has a CDC chemical dependency counselor 2, which is the highest level, and a master's in counseling from Hazelden. So he's the man, and he's going to do the overview of recovery and addiction. And then we'll be looking at the costs of addiction to a kind of a multi-domain thing, the cost of the individual, like the user, cost of their family, cost of the community. We're not offering solutions at this point, are we?
No.
And that's later. And then you talk the other two.
Okay. Well, and then the third and fourth Saturdays, we're going to show films. So the first film is Beautiful Boy. That's right. And the fourth Saturday, we will be showing Ben Is Back. And the purpose behind showing these films is to they're both very good. We've both screened these movies, and they are well, for sure, Beautiful Boy is a true story, and there are books that both the father and the son that are involved in that wrote about their experience. And so they accurately depict what occurs in relationships and in families. So it isn't just, you know, I think we often think about addiction in terms of the person who is addicted, but there are so many ways that the immediate family members are impacted, and then family, you know, the whole family system, neighborhoods are impacted, employers are impacted, schools are impacted, and I've seen this firsthand through my work with Department of Corrections, and through all of the studying that I've done about, you know, psychology and addiction. And so these movies are like I said, they accurately depict what happens within the family setting and the community setting. And so we're hoping what happens is, you know, we watch these films and then we can have some discussion about what, you know, how, you know, for the audience, how do you feel about what you saw? How does that impact, you know, your thinking about addiction and how it impacts families and communities? What do you see that you can relate to? What would you like to see that could perhaps help your situation or someone else's situation that you might be familiar with? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we talk about the effects on those different domains, it's like you can imagine ripples in a pond, and where each of those, you know, things, that the peak in the ripple is where those domains meet, and anytime something happens in one of those, it affects all the other ones across the pond. And our main goal in this event is that we want to increase understanding of the addiction process, addiction to certain things. The whole goal is to increase empathy instead of, those bad people. Because there's no such thing as human debris, period.
There you go. Yeah, because, like, what are the... so this is a trying to talk back or fight back against stigma.
Yeah, yes.
Associated with these topics.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of it in that terms, but yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I remember, you know, before COVID, there were some community conversations about this, and this was before, well, I, you know, I don't really know the timeline of fentanyl, but... so it seems like we were having, you know, some conversations about that before, and then we haven't in a few years. So what was it that, what was kind of the exigence? What was that spark there? Like, you know what, we should do this, and we should take a month. We should take a really long time. Right. I mean, right. To do this instead of just one evening community conversation.
Oh, I'm hoping that this is the beginning of something that can happen more regularly, because I have a feeling that we probably will not reach every single person who might be interested in learning more about this, or, you know, be impacted by this. And so I'm hoping that, you know, down the road we will do more of these lunch and learn workshops. So, you know, the idea to do this came to me because people that I know have died from fentanyl overdose. People that I care about have lost their lives, and their families are grieving. And I don't want any more people to die. I guess that's the bottom line.
And in the press releases, you have identified, like, there's going to be an emphasis on methamphetamines, fentanyl, and other opioids, and that's because that's where the crisis point is at right now.
Right. Yeah. In the Alaska State Troopers AST report, it's all aggregate. You don't have any Kodiak numbers picked out. Yeah. But fentanyl was number 3 in the last report for 2022. But in 2021, it wasn't even on the list. Hmm. So it's really emerging. And interestingly, in the 2022 report, psilocybin was number 5. So it might be worth watching what's coming next. I thought we were done with that in the 60s, but I guess not.
Well, things have we actually, just this past week, we studied in my grad school course, you know, what our theories are about why there are certain drug trends, because they do tend to kind of cycle. And a lot of it has to do with availability and price. And so, you know, if you look at that with regard to the opioid crisis, I mean, the availability just went through the roof with OxyContin. And then, so, you know, and then things really cascaded after that, and led to where we are today with fentanyl.
I remember Chief Putney talking at a community thing about how at one point people would go off island, get drugs, bring them back for personal use, and then all of a sudden, boom, they were bringing them back to sell and make big money on. That was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So the community has turned a very dangerous corner on that.
Let's talk some more about the community. I think sometimes when we see workshops or discussions like this, there is that very strong friend and family connection. Nearly all of us are touched by somebody who has issues with addiction or are in recovery and helping to support somebody in recovery. Let's talk about some of those ripple effects that come out of that kind of hit the family, and then, Jill, like you said, hit our schools, hit our employers, hit our community. And in these workshops, what are some of the things? Because these workshops aren't just for friends and family. These workshops are just for any community member who's interested in how this issue is affecting them. So what are some of the things they might be looking at getting or learning?
I think that, you know, what I hope that people will learn is that there really is no one at all who can say that they are not affected. And that is because even if you have no one in your family who is suffering from an addiction, you know someone, but you might not know that you know someone. It is a hard topic to talk about, because there's so much emotion associated with it and the stigma that we talked about earlier. But for instance, if we look at the different aspects of the community, if we look at employers, you know, has anybody noticed that, you know, many businesses are short-staffed, or are they short-staffed, you know, for, you know, reasons that have to do with, you know, looking back at COVID or other reasons? One of the reasons that we can look at is that people who are suffering from addiction, they often want to work, and the addiction, you know, issues in their lives get in the way of them being able to come to work. Or they might come to work and not be suitable for working that day. So, you know, that's one of the things to look at, is that people who are really, you know, in really struggling with their addiction, they have difficulty maintaining employment. They have difficulty maintaining housing. So then that leads to homelessness, which affects our community. We see it, and you know, we need to support the people who are houseless, who have nowhere to live. You know, because that's our responsibility. We all have a responsibility to take care of one another. When we look at the school system, boy, you know, if you have children in the school system, there are students who are coming to school who are either in possession or, you know, have been using. And so that affects, you know, as you can imagine, it affects the quality of, like, the classroom experience if there are students who are impacted by that, or perhaps their parents, one or both, are struggling with addiction. So maybe the student themselves is not directly, you know, using or in possession of narcotics, but, you know, they're impacted otherwise because of their parents' addiction. And then that makes it difficult. There are children who are taking care of their families because their parents can't. They're shouldering a lot of responsibility. Then let's talk about grandparents who are raising their grandchildren because their children are not able to because of their addiction. So, I mean, when you look at it in terms of how that, you know, how one person, you know, good or bad, you know, even when we look at the good things that we do in life, one person impacts many, many lives.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of ripple effects, and if you don't want to wade into this, that's fine. We can zhuzh on to something else, but the school district is going through their budget conversations right now, and some of the first positions on the list to cut were counselors and their contract with Providence for counseling services.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a compounding ripple effect that
yes.
We have to take on more of the load as resources, especially financial resources from wherever, from the state. And
if you look at just in terms of business sense and insurance and the hospital, they're trying to run on a business model, which I think doesn't work for families and people. So they're trying to go less costly themselves, which, okay, they're these school budget funded counselors, but they're not going to replace them from outside of the school district. They're not going to get replaced. Mm-hmm. So it's a bigger hole than just that school district's cutting them. Yeah, I was kind of horrified at that list.
but there's also, I mean, there's also kind of a community-wide general gap in counseling services just because there aren't enough,
right.
To meet the need.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so families and have to pick up that.
Right. And, you know, the one thing that I hope people will reach out to our peer support services, because peer support, and I know CANA has got a new program of some kind. So when we talk about peer support, we all have the potential to be a peer, right? So I think sometimes people think when they hear peer support, because it's been used so much to talk about the recovery community and people, you know, people who have overcome their addiction or in long-term recovery, being peer support for others who are struggling or in their journey of recovery. But peer support also means, like, if you're a parent of a child in addiction, you are valuable to other parents. And so maybe, you know, if counseling services are not available to you, or if you're, you know, I know people have to be on a wait list, mm-hmm, you know, to, mm-hmm, to get in to see a counselor, maybe reach out to find some peer support that can at least be, you know, it's not a licensed solution to the mental health issues that you might be struggling with, but it definitely is helpful. And that's another aspect of this event, educational event that we're having in March, is that we're going to push out as much information as we can to the community about resources that they can find online, and, you know, for education about these issues. But also, there are so many really, really good support groups through Facebook and other social media platforms that that meet, you know, regularly on Zoom, and those can be so helpful, especially in a community that is so small like Kodiak, where maybe you don't feel comfortable attending a group in person or even online that is local. There are so many out there that that we want to get that information out to people so that they will find the support that they need.
He's writing.
Oh, I'm a copious note taker. When I eventually die, there's just going to be totes and totes and totes of just...
Totes of notes.
Totes of notes. Feel sorry for my kids who will have to... They probably won't even read them. They'll just recycle them. We have a couple minutes left, so let's just wrap up and talk about... Just remind everybody about the four-part community workshop that's coming up. They will be focused primarily on addiction and recovery. What's the noun I'm looking for? Not just resources, but it's support, it's information, education. Yeah. It's
with the goal that understanding can increase empathy.
Yes. Designed for friends and families of substance abusers, service providers. We haven't really talked about support for the caretakers, you know, also that's such a huge thing in and of itself.
Right. And I actually have something coming up in April that we can talk about on another Talk of the Rock, perhaps.
Okay.
That is exactly geared towards helping look after those who look after us.
Yeah. These workshops, first four Fridays in March.
Saturdays.
I was going for the alliteration there. Yeah. First four Saturdays in March, the 4th through the 23rd. And just give us a brief outline what's going to go on in each of these workshops. You start off with a discussion or film?
Well, overview.
The first two... Overview and hitting the main points. The second Saturday, we'll go deeper and
into the costs,
right?
With a little bit, you know, I'm gonna. There's got to be stats, right? That's the foundation of a home. Yeah,
Thea's the data nerd.
Right. Yeah, that's why we're good together. Yeah. And then the last two, there'll be the film and discussion with those. And each Saturday, we provide lunch. And there'll be like a little activity that we'll do also during that time to reinforce our learning process.
And so for the lunch and using this space, there is a small fee, but really seating is... Oh, no fee.
No, there's no fee.
Oh, I'm going to scratch that off the PSA now.
Absolutely. We camp came to the rescue and said, nope, we'll cover it, make it free to the community.
Fantastic.
So that there won't be a barrier to anyone.
But seating is limited. It's not a...
Right.
It's a It's a space, but
we're not doing it in the auditorium.
Right.
That's
yeah.
too big.
And so to reserve your space, you can go to kodiakreentry.org or send Jill an email.
You can email me at jillsey99615@gmail.com. Or you can text me at 907-539-6905. Any way you want to reach us is fine, and we'll get you registered so that you can secure your seat because we're limiting it to 25 participants.
All right. Well, thank you, Jill and Thea, for joining me on Talk of the Rock to talk about these very important community conversations that we should be having.
Thank you, Jared.
Thank you. And thanks for listening.